Are you looking for a deep dive on this year's crop of rookie QBs? Do you want to get ahead of your league mates understanding which quarterbacks to target in this year's rookie drafts? Stick around as we dive into the strengths, weaknesses, and the fantasy outlooks of the big six quarterbacks of this year's draft class. Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Sanctuary. We're back. I'm joined by the fantasy guru, Kenny, my brother himself. We're going to walk through the big six names at the quarterback position. We're going to break down their strengths, their weaknesses, and talk about what we think their potential fantasy outlook could be. Before we do that, Kenny, this class as a whole, it seems to be getting some hype. I can't remember a year where we've got potentially six first-round quarterbacks. Are you, I guess, as an overall class, are you excited? Do you think this could potentially live up to the hype, or do you think it's going to be destined for disappointment like the 2021 class?
Yeah, I think looking back at the names, I think we started doing this in 2020, didn't we? Looking back, that 2020 class looks unbelievably strong, but I don't think we were rating that as highly then as we do now. Yeah, I mean, 2021 was obviously supposed to be, you know, five first-round QBs. And you look at it now, and I think you and I are both still on board with Trevor Lawrence, but I don't know if we're in the majority there, or it's certainly a lot less than it was 3 years ago. And everyone else after there has even moved on to a new team or has kind of flamed out. So
yeah, it's one star on four busts, we'll call it, I think, that class.
Yeah. So I think now let's be optimistic. It's always like, you know, I like to preface it always with when I'm high on a guy, I obviously hope it works out. But even when I'm low on a guy, you want them to prove you wrong and you want them all to work out. So it'd be lovely if we had six QBs that went in the first round that all turned in to be good NFL quarterbacks, because it makes the game more entertaining, doesn't it? You know, the more good QBs, the better the NFL is and the more fun it is. So, you know, as long as they're all not as good as Lamar.
Yeah, I think there's some excitement. I think there's potential. I'd be shocked if we end up with six in the first round. I think it's probably going to settle in at four. I think maybe four and then maybe three on day two would be my prediction right now. But I think there's some tantalizing potential. I think you throw in the COVID, the extra year, the fact that we've seen some kind of late career breakouts from three of these guys. And it's, you know, you've got three youngsters, three experienced guys, and it's kind of created this kind of wealth of potential options. But we'll start at the top, the hyped guy, the big name, the guy we've been thirsting over for the past 3 years since those early days in Oklahoma. Of course, I'm talking about Caleb Williams. He's out of USC, 6'1", 212 pounds, had, you know, Heisman year, phenomenal 3 year career with Lincoln Riley. What is it about Caleb Williams? You think there's some potential strengths? Where are we looking potentially?
So he's definitely my QB1. And I have him alone in this class. I think he's a very exciting prospect. I don't have him as high as I had Lawrence, but I wouldn't have him far off. I think he's got a great throwing motion, a tight throwing motion, a bit of a wobbly spiral, I noticed, but not too bad. And Peyton Manning had one of those, so we can let him off for that. I was very impressed with how he was able to lay a ball over a defender, loft a pass over the top of over zones and things. I thought that was elite. Very good arm strength. I think in that offense, and I'll come to the offense in a minute. I think in that offense, I didn't really see him zing it too often, but you could see that the arm strength was there. I mean, he's an exceptional playmaker, and he spent a lot of time making stuff up out of stuff that wasn't there. Now I'll get to the offense. I just thought it was chaos at times when I was watching it, and I just wasn't quite sure what was going on. And I guess that's my biggest question with him, is that offense was chaotic, and clearly the line was an issue. I'd be amazed if, I don't know if they've got any seniors on their line this year or whatever, but I'd be amazed if any of those guys played in the NFL, because I mean, the Oregon game in particular, out of the ones I looked at, it felt like at times he was receiving the snap and there were guys there, like it did. But then, and I don't necessarily mean this, I know that there's been people talking about Patrick Mahomes and the comparison there, and I wouldn't want to put that on anybody because, I mean, he's playing at a level that we don't see very often, so I think it's unfair to start comparing to Patrick Mahomes. But the bit that reminded me of, do you remember in the Super Bowl against the Bucks, where the Chiefs line broke down, and it felt like at times Mahomes was breaking the pocket and coming out of structure even when there wasn't pressure, but because he had no trust in the line. But it wasn't that the line had broken down on that play. And I kind of got that feeling with Caleb Williams. I thought, it's chaotic here. He's making things up. He's going out of structure almost every play, every drop back, it felt, in certain games. But I wasn't sure, was that because the line was so bad? Was that because actually he struggles to play within the structure? And you can't really get an answer with that. I mean, the older film, I went back and watched a little bit of 2022, and he seemed to be doing it more. So I'm hoping for his sake that it was that the breakdown in the line and the chaos of the offense that meant that he did that. But other than that, I mean, he's an unbelievable athlete. And, you know, he's one of those, he is able to not only scramble, but obviously to keep plays alive, to make plays. Incredible improviser. Like I said, in 2022, he seemed to be better in rhythm. That was the only thing that I was a bit disappointed with watching his film this year is, you know, I think there's three ways that the QBs can play, is that you play within the structure, without out of structure, and as a scrambler. And he seemed to be, there was very few times when, you know, he hit his back foot, read the open man, and got the ball out, you know. That didn't seem to happen a lot. And the only other question mark I have is, obviously, I think he's a little under ideal size, but he seems quite thick in his body type, so I'm not worried too much about that. And, you know, I'm sure he's got a bit of capacity to put on weight, but 6'1", 212 isn't huge, but the NFL seems to be getting smaller across the board these days, so maybe that's just something I've got to get used to.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I love Caleb Williams, and it's fun to watch. He's, you know, it is phenomenal. I agree with you on every single one of the strengths. I think the talent is very clear to see. You know, you don't need to be an experienced fan, football watcher, film watcher, whatever, to see the talent is clear, and the playmaking ability is phenomenal. My big question mark, as you said, is that reliance on out of structure. And I think that, you know, yes, the offensive line was an issue. Yes, he is phenomenal out of structure. But maybe I'm slightly burned by the fact I had to sit and watch Zach Wilson for 2.5 years break the pocket far too early when it was potentially clean, and roll out and try to create out of structure because he didn't have the ability to sit in the pocket and create within structure. I don't think Caleb Williams is that, but it does alarm me how much of a reliance he did have on kind of creating out of structure. I mean, some numbers, he was kept clean on 66% of his dropbacks, which is low, shall we say. But the alarming thing for me is his time to throw was still 2.5 seconds when kept clean. Like, that should be low 2 seconds on passes where you're kept clean. Like, I get, you know, when you're under pressure, it's his time to throw was up over 4.5. Part of that is because he's scrambling around and making plays and stuff. But I do worry that, you know, the NFL is, yeah, it's fantastic when players can create out structure, but it is still a pass from the pocket league. And yeah, I do worry that there is a potential knock there. And if he is going to struggle, that's where he's going to struggle. I do also think that he has fantastic arm talent, but he trusts it a little bit too much sometimes. I think he tries to fit the ball into incredibly tight windows. I think he trusts himself to, you know, make some plays downfield that are fine in college. But yeah, in the NFL, you know, you hear it time and time again, those windows are smaller. And yeah, it might be that it's just a bit of a learning curve and it takes some time to kind of get over. But it could be that that's an issue at the next level. So I am intrigued to see how that goes. And then the third thing is, I think he's a fantastic athlete. I think he's phenomenal in the QB run game as a supplement. I don't think he's going to be a big part of the QB run game. My issue is that he scrambles a lot behind the line of scrimmage, but he very rarely tucks and runs. Like, if you look at the stats, there's not a huge amount of scramble yards that he's picking up. And I do wonder if he's kind of leaving a little bit of meat on the bone there. I think it's fantastic, you know, a quarterback looking to get out the pocket, create and use his arm. But I think there's times where he could tuck it and run. And let's be honest, for fantasy, that's hugely beneficial if he can essentially pick up that some of those 3 yards. So I do wonder if we could see him do that potentially more at the next level as well.
Yeah, I think like what you were saying there, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think with the offense, again, I was very surprised. I don't watch much USC. I don't watch anyone out of the SEC. It's all Division II as far as I'm concerned. But I thought that I was surprised knowing the reputation that Lincoln Riley has as an offensive guru, how bad the line was, but also how he wasn't throwing to many wide open receivers. You know, you think of college, usually there's ways that these guys can scheme open some guys and you can get some easy throws in there. And it felt like every time I was watching it, he was having to try and fit a ball into a fairly tight window. And I agree with you, it's going to be the same in the NFL, you know, it is. But I felt like, I think that the talent is there. And I think if you look at some of the older film, I think it's more evident. I think, I don't know what's quite gone on with USC this year. It felt all a bit scrambled, all a bit stuff hasn't gone on. I'm sure there'll be a really good book written in 5 years' time about it all. But I think that he's not a flawless prospect. Like I said, I don't think I was impressed with him as I was with Lawrence, but I think for me, he's still the clear QB1 in this. And I think in the actual NFL draft, I think he's, I think the Bears will definitely be taking him. I can't see anyone else that they would consider. And I think in any kind of super flex league, if you got the number one, I think you've got to be going and getting him, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I toyed with it and did a lot of kind of deep dives and looked at potential breakdowns and options of, return on investment of wide receiver and quarterback, but it still comes down to it. I think quarterback is king in superflex leagues, and it would require something drastic happening on draft day for Caleb Williams not to be the 101 for me in all of those formats.
I think as well, the other thing you've got to look at as well, if he is the number one and he does go to the Bears, it's not the usual situation that actually that isn't the worst team in the league. And there's actually a lot of things in place. They're not that far away as an offense, I don't think. I think a better scheme, a couple of pieces, which obviously they might be able to get one with the ninth pick as well. I think that's, and I know definitely you're one of those guys that doesn't, you know, just draft on the talent, don't get too drawn in on the landing spot, all that kind of stuff. But I do think that, as we will come to with probably some of the other guys, that there are other situations that you can end up in where I would fear that these guys, if they're chucked into the normal high draft pick where they're expected to do a lot, it might be too much. Where I think if he does go number one overall, it's also kind of unusual in that I think he's ending up in a better spot than a lot of the other higher picks might end up in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, let's be honest, the Bears need to make the playoffs this year, which sounds ridiculous for the team drafting 101, but Eberflus, I don't think, has a job if they don't make the playoffs. And I think that, you know, yes, that they've got a superstar receiver. I think they're probably going to add at least another receiving weapon, whether that be at 9 or in free agency. There's some pieces on the offensive line. They've got a tackle they can build around. And I'm a lot higher on Khalil Herbert than a lot of players, but I think that running game is there as well. And I think that, you know, Cole Kmet is a competent above average tight end, quite frankly. And this offense is probably about as good as you could hope for a team picking 101. And yeah, it's a really good landing spot. And I think Caleb Williams is going to be expected to and need to produce from week one, because I think if the Bears don't make a playoff push this year, I think it could be, a new head coach potentially moving in.
Yeah, definitely.
But we're going to move across to, our next quarterback is, of course, Drake May, the prototypical 6'4", 230 pounds. Now, Kenny, I feel like this is one we're going to disagree on. I thought, as an old school, you know, size, arm strength, kind of guy, you'd be a big Drake May fan. But I understand you're not the biggest Drake May fan in the world.
No, not at all. I'm much like you. Like, going into this, I thought, well, this is the guy that I'm going to like, clearly. We'd heard about him for a little while. And like you say, you know, I'm a Snickers theory guy. You know, the Warren Buffett story of, he was asked after the financial crash, you know, what are we going to do to rebuild? And he said, what's the most popular candy bar in America in 1962? And it was a Snickers. And he said, in 2008, what's the most popular candy bar? And it was still the Snickers. And he was saying that there's inbuilt things that will always be popular, you know, and you focus on those things. And 6'4", 230-pound QBs with rocket arms, that should be it. But I don't see it. I'm not a fan. I think the hype is too much, goes too far for me. And I would be really wary about taking him, and I would be really wary about taking him as high as he's being projected at the moment, because I see a lot of holes that will make it hard for him to carry a team. But I mean, there are positives. For example, obviously he's prototype size, he's a tough runner and a very good athlete. He obviously took on a lot because he was clearly the best player on the offense. I don't think I've seen a Division One college offense where it was just almost, it felt like at times, right, we'll snap him the ball and figure it out from there, kind of thing. He hangs in the pocket well. There was some playmaking stuff. I don't know if you saw the film with the left-handed throw. That was pretty special. I'll give him that. But I also had a lot of problems. I think mechanically he's needs some serious work. I mean, I almost felt like at times his upper body seemed to spend a lot of time fighting his lower body. I thought he didn't step into throws like I'd like to, but equally he actually reminded me, and I don't know, maybe I'm getting drawn into the uniform, but he reminded me a bit of, I had the same problem with Sam Howe, that I felt like Sam Howe was just constantly throwing off his back foot, even when there was room in the pocket to step up. And this was obviously when we did this a couple of years ago. Sam Howe was sort of being talked about as maybe he sneaks into day one, maybe he's a day two kind of prospect. I know he fell to the fifth. I think that obviously, I think he lacked trust in his receivers. But the biggest problem for me was he just missed a lot. He just missed a lot of throws. And I know that you probably will have defenders out there, and I think you're one of them, who will come on and say that, you know, the line wasn't good, there were problems, he didn't have a reliable receiver, Quez Watkins wasn't quite what everyone hoped he would be, you know, and I'll take that into there. But when I was watching his film, I just thought, there were guys, you know, like I said with Caleb Williams, I didn't see Caleb Williams getting many open looks. And I felt like when Drake May was getting some wide open looks, he wasn't taking them. And, you know, I, as I said at the start of this, I'm happy to be wrong. I hope he goes on, and if he's drafted, wherever he's drafted, I hope he goes and has a successful career. But put it this way, he won't be someone. I've got the third pick in a couple of leagues that we're in. He won't be my third pick if he's still sitting there, kind of thing. So, you know.
Maybe I need to be coming and knocking on the door and seeing if I can steal that third pick away.
Absolutely. I business, mate.
I think that, for me, there is one clear issue, and you mentioned it there. I think the footwork is a glaring red flag. I think that basically that footwork issue led to all of the other issues that you mentioned there. I think that when he sets his feet and when he throws with good footwork, he is highly accurate. And I think that he can make anticipation throws on time accurately. The problem is that there was far too many times and far too often where, as you said, his footwork didn't marry up with what was happening above the waist, and it led to inaccuracy issues. For me, I don't see that being a massive issue. I think that is the kind of thing that can be worked in off-season. I think we're probably going to see that he is working with some sort of QB guru right now. I think that any team is going to rebuild his footwork and be able to coach that out. And I think that I'm viewing him as, if we eliminate throws where he throws with poor footwork, I think he is a phenomenal prospect. Now, I appreciate I have just cut out probably about 60% of his throws in college last year, because it is very often that he throws with poor footwork. But I think his processing ability, I think, is probably the best in this class. I think you see the ability for him to push the ball downfield consistently, but not take chances that lead to picks. And some of that is a little bit of luck. Let's be honest, he did get a few dropped interceptions and things like that. But he seems to understand the time and place for, right, I need to go and make a play now, versus I need to be slightly more sensible. And I think that's a really innate skill that people underestimate in the NFL. And I think that, you know, you look at Drake May's not Patrick Mahomes, but you look at Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes seems to understand the situation, the game, where we're at, how much of a risk do I need to take here? And I think Drake May's got that. And I think that, look, this is a guy that's a better athlete than anybody talks about. He is a better scrambler than Caleb Williams. He has the prototypical size, phenomenal arm talent. He can make every throw in the NFL. And I think that that combined with the processing ability for me is enough to overcome the footwork. Now, is there a world where Drake May completely falls apart and is a bust because he doesn't sort the footwork out? Yes, absolutely. But I just think that where we're at in the NFL, where we're at with the kind of the QB coaches in the offseason things, I think that that will get and can get worked on. So it's a little bit of projection with Drake May, but I'm drinking the Kool-Aid and I'm happy to take that risk.
Yeah, I'm not. You're not persuading me around on this. I think I can see what you're saying about that, but there was also a lot of times when, for example, there were problems with fumbles and, you know, I noticed he dropped the ball in the pocket, you know, like, I don't mean literally dropped it. I mean, it would hold the ball lower than you would ideally want a quarterback while they're waiting to pass. And just he has slightly elongated motion. It can be almost a bit stuttery at times and things like that. And I just think there was a lot of problems there to me, you know. And I know the NFL's going to love him because the NFL, most teams are like these women that, you know, want to marry bad boys and stuff where they believe they can change him because the raw tools are there. They are, you know, he's 6'4", 230, and he can absolutely gun it when he wants to. I didn't think he threw a particularly impressive deep ball. And again, he didn't necessarily get a chance to, but and it might not have been within the offense. And I'm going in. I mean, I'm always reluctant to put too much weight on rushing with some of the QBs, just because I think we had it when we talked about Trey Lance, wasn't it? You know, he's playing in the ACC and there's obviously some NFL players that he's been going up against, but there's a lot of guys that aren't, you know, that will never see an NFL field. So, you know, it's a whole different ball game running wise. And I don't know if he's an elite runner personally. He's obviously mobile. He's obviously a good athlete, but I don't know if he's going to be an elite runner. And then, like I say, I feel like there's a lot to fix there. And I also worry if he's gonna go 2 or 3. I mean, for example, say he goes 3 to the Pats, there ain't much there that's going to be helping him. And I would just feel like, you know, we've seen it, as you know very, very, very well, Rich, if a QB gets thrown into a situation where there's not a lot of talent around him, it can break him pretty quick. And that would be my big deal with him.
I think with the rushing, I think people talk about rushing as if it's one thing. I think for me, talking Caleb Williams and Drake May is a perfect example of how rushing is very different. Caleb Williams was used and is competent as a schemed rushing quarterback. He is used in the QB run game. He is used on kind of zone reads, that kind of thing. He scrambles very rarely. Drake May is the complete opposite. He was used occasionally in the QB run game around the line of scrimmage, but he very rarely was used on designed runs. Nearly all of his rushing yardage and production came on scrambles. And I think for me, unless you're going to be, and we'll come on to one of those quarterbacks in a minute, a Lamar, a Kyler, a Jaden Daniels, a Jalen Hurts, where you're such a phenomenal rusher that we're going to rely on that, I almost think that I would prefer a scrambler over someone like Caleb Williams, because I don't think Caleb Williams is going to add very much rushing production at all in the NFL. because I don't think a team is gonna, he's not a good enough rushing quarterback to be used in the QB run game, and therefore he doesn't scramble. So I don't think he'll get much rushing production. Whereas Drake May, I think will be, because of his size, he will be used in and around the goal line. And because of that scrambling ability, he's not going to have massive rushing production, but I think he could easily put up 300, 350 yards, which is an extra, you know, 35 points on a year. That's the difference between, you know, potentially a back end QB1 and a sort of a mid QB1. I think that's more reliable than the rushing production someone like Caleb Williams will potentially put up. And that's where I'm, I guess, a little bit more excited about Drake May's rushing upside than someone like Caleb Williams.
Yeah, maybe, but I think that's, you know, I don't know. I would worry enough about, I think we've talked about this, that you've got to be a good enough passer to stay on the field. And I've got my doubts about that side of it. I take what you're saying about the rushing. I mean, I think he's more of a, he struck me more as a Josh Allen runner, but I don't think he's quite as quick, and I didn't seem quite as fearless. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm always, when I'm low on these guys, I'm always hope that I'm wrong, because I want them to go and have good careers. And, you know, like I say, the more good QBs, the better. But he's one that, you know, I don't think he'll be ending up on any of my teams. I think that he'll be getting picked by other people.
Yeah, well, it all comes down to that footwork. I think that's the key thing. I think if he can, you know, resolve that fairly glaring issue, I think there's some potential hope there. If not, he's probably going to struggle. Moving on to the next guy, though, Jaden Daniels. Phenomenal two-year stretch with LSU. 6'4", 210 is how he's listed. He didn't weigh in at the combine, didn't get measured. I'd suggest that might be a little bit lighter than 210. He's, of course, 23 years old after 3 years with Arizona State. Now, Jaden Daniels is either, you have to love him or hate him. He is 100% the Marmite of this class. I don't think there's any middle ground, Kenny. So, are you a lover or are you a hater of Jaden Daniels?
I, do you know what? I am 100% the lover, and I hate myself why for the thing about the Snickers theory, because, I mean, his film is the best in this class. There's no doubt about it. I mean, there's a little part of me that is kind of hoping he goes one to the Bears and somehow they can get Neighbors at 9 and they can have the two of them, because that LSU offense was so much fun. I would sit there and watch that tape all day long. It was just brilliant. And of course, where their defense was so bad, they were having to score so many points. It was just brilliant. So I am a massive fan, but I will caveat it with, but we'll talk positive. Let's talk positive to start with. I mean, his release is phenomenal. He's an incredible runner. You know what I was saying about, I could see him winning in all three ways a QB could, because there were times when he was playmaking and scrambling to keep the play alive. He obviously was a schemed runner. It was exceptional. But I saw what I didn't see at times with Caleb, which was, you know, he could string together 4, 5, 6 plays in a row where he was 1, 2, 3, back foot, boom, ball out, in time, in rhythm, getting, you know. So a huge fan. Smooth, so fun to watch. I mean, if your team drafts him, I think you should be, I don't know whether it will be good, but I think it should be fun at points, definitely. I thought his accuracy was really good. He gets the ball out quick. Obviously, he had some very talented receivers in that offense, and that obviously made things easier for him. Yeah, he would be my QB2 for me, definitely, and probably closer to Caleb than some other people would definitely have him. But there's three big caveats, isn't there? There's the weight. We haven't seen QBs be successful in the NFL at that kind of size. And it's a huge concern. The age, and the fact that, obviously, I won't get into breakout age and all that. I know that's your baby, so I'll leave you to talk about those kind of things and stuff. And the fact that he was 23 and you know, that was when he truly started to look like an elite prospect. And he runs like, I mean, I think Lamar Jackson should give the Ravens some deal on the cap, maybe give a bit of money back and go out and teach some of these runners how to avoid getting destroyed, because he runs like a crazy man. Like, you know, he's 6'4", 210, and he's running at 250, 260 pound defensive ends and just running into them and getting absolutely lit up. And he isn't going to last long if he does that. I mean, all the hype, and we saw with Anthony Richardson last year, didn't we? And he was obviously a much bigger human being. And he took a beating and you know, was knocked out in his rookie season. And it is just hard on these guys. The only person I think that we've ever seen was Cam Newton, really, that could survive playing in that way as a QB, a running QB that could lower the shoulder and just go into people. I mean, the beauty of Lamar Jackson is that if you watch him, he especially when he's running, he is never hit with his feet on the ground. He is always diving or finding ways to lessen the blow. You know, it's very rare you see him, I think, now running full speed, because he runs at, say, 80-85% because he's fully aware of, I need to live for the next play. You know, he's too valuable to do that. And Jaden Daniels, I think if he's going to have any kind of career, he needs to learn that quick, because some of the hits he took were insane.
It's incredible. There's some footage of like some of the hits he takes. It is absolutely mind-blowing. To me, he runs like he thinks he's Josh Allen, in terms of Josh Allen has that way of, I'm bigger and stronger than all of these linebackers and DBs, so I'm gonna try and run over them, and that's what Jaden Daniel does. And I mean, the way he jumps up and like tries to hurdle guys, and it's just like a car crash every time. And I think that if he tries to do that in the NFL, A, his head coach is going to have a heart attack because they're thinking, that's my franchise quarterback who's getting destroyed there. But B, he's not going to last long. So I think that is a huge concern. I know you talked about the ability for him to process from the pocket, and there were times when he did it. I still have concerns about how often I saw him making kind of progression reads. I think there's times where he can throw from the pocket and get the ball out quick and, you know, make a, right, am I going high, low here? Boom, job done. But I didn't often see him go 1-2-3. And part of that might be because he was going 1-2 and then tucking it and running it. But I think in the NFL, if he's going to have any sort of longevity, he needs to be able to make those kind of full field read progression type plays. And I don't know if I saw that enough on film.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can do that. I think also you have to give him the benefit of the doubt that he was playing with two first round receivers. So he probably went one, oh, he's open, I'll throw it there. A bit like CJ Stroud last year with Harrison, that, you know, oh, when that's your number one receiver, oh yeah, that guy's open. So yeah, but I do take what you're saying. It's not an NFL offense in that sense. He's not going to be sitting. And I mean, but to be fair as well, I don't know how many QBs in the NFL now sit there in the pocket and read 1-2-3.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, there's not. Yeah, you know. So I do take what you're saying. I think he can win from the pocket enough that, you know, it's part of his game. It isn't like some of the other guys we've come out the last few years where you're like, how's he going to, you know, it's not Zach Wilson like we talked about, where, you know, you were maybe masked by what looked like elite playmaking. I think there was enough there with Daniels where you were like, he's doing that within the structure of the offense, you know. But yeah, I do take what you say. He's not making multiple reads on one play.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, you know, people are down on Caleb Williams and Drake May for how they regressed from their second to third years. You go back and look at Jaden Daniels' third year in college, you know, 2021 with Arizona State, he had 10 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He had a big time throw rate of 2.6%, a turnover with play rate of 2.3%. Like, he had a really bad year. And yes, a lot of that is Arizona State and the issues. But if you're a superstar franchise quarterback, you should be able to bring that offense forward. And yeah, no doubt he's grown a lot, he's developed a lot, and he's had a phenomenal 2 years at LSU. But I can't not look back at that tape from, you know, those first 3 years with Arizona State and bake that into the evaluation ever so slightly.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I think these are all fair worries, definitely, with, you know, Jaden Daniels. There are some sort of glaring red flags. But to me, I would, you know, the fact that his film was so good this season, I didn't see anything from Drake May that looked like his film looked like. And I'm going to be willing to bet on that, even with the red flags, personally, you know. So I would, that's why he's my QB2, and I will, yeah. I will go down with him, definitely. So if people want to leave him there for me at pick three, I'm happy for that.
And let's be honest, if you know, if you just want to watch quarterback that's fun, there's few players that are going to be as fun as watching Jaden.
I mean,
Daniels
that is
next year.
That it's is it. Ultimately, he is going to be a fun guy to have on your team and to be cheering for, really, isn't he? I mean, it might not last very long if he doesn't learn how to slide and get out of the way, but but it will be fun. I think it really will.
Could be in the league for a good time, not a long time. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We're going to move on to the next quarterback now. We're talking JJ McCarthy, out of Michigan, one of the youngest quarterbacks in the draft, only 21 years old. Prototypical height. I am not convinced about the frame. He weighed in at the combine north of 210. Yeah. I think he's probably going to settle in around 200 pounds. The biggest, I guess, question mark we have about JJ McCarthy is he wasn't really asked to do much in the Michigan offense over the last 2 years because the offense was so good, because that offensive line and the running game was phenomenal. Do you think JJ McCarthy is going to be able to step into the NFL and potentially be that franchise quarterback from day one?
No. I'm not a JJ McCarthy guy either. I mean, I think there's room for growth there. The thing that I'm struggling with a little bit is some of the names that I hear him compared to, and obviously what he was asked to do within Michigan's offense was, you know, play within structure, great, you know, manage the offense, take your shots when you need to, all that kind of thing. And I hear a little bit of, you know, Kirk Cousins and maybe Drew Brees and maybe even Brock Purdy, I've heard a couple of times, that kind of thing. And I'm like, yeah, none of those guys were round one QBs. I mean, the idea of him being a top 10 quarterback to me is insane, because the whole benefit of the Shanahan system, and I hear him linked with those, and I can see that. I can see he could do quite well in those kind of systems. But the idea is that you're not paying premium money for a QB. You're picking one of them up later. I mean, he has some strengths. He's athletic and obviously had some insane numbers at the combine, and he's a fundamentally sound prospect, you know, like his tape was clean, like, you know, he had good footwork, he had good accuracy, I thought he was willing to try and fit the ball into some tight windows at times, perhaps he shouldn't have, but he was willing to take those on, he wasn't scared. I was like, with you when I was watching the film, I was like, this guy looks skinny and kind of a bit small, and then suddenly it's like, oh, 6'3", 220, and you're like, okay,
it's a lot of water.
My eyes must be yeah, because that, yeah, so I don't know how real that is, but obviously if he is 6'3", 220, he's not small and he's not skinny, but yeah. I thought there is arm talent there, but I thought watching it, it looked to me like when he was throwing the ball, he had to really throw the ball, if that makes sense. You know, so when he was throwing a 10-yard inbreaker or something, it looked to me like he was really having to step in and really having to get his body through the throw, which he was playing behind that Michigan offensive line with that running attack, and it bought him a lot of time. And I can see how, you know, so he was playing a lot from a clean pocket. He was able to step into his throws and be able to do that. I would be concerned about, I don't think he's going to necessarily have that talent advantage in those areas in the NFL. How good is he at throwing off platform? How good is he when he's having to just rely on getting the ball out with his arm? Which, you know, if it's like we said, you know, if he can sit there in the pocket and go 1, 2, 3, I think, yes, I think he can do that. But it looked to me like he had to put a lot in to get the ball out there. I saw some looking off, which we were talking about, and I think he was a good processor. I think you could see it where, again, he had the benefit of time and probably more of a pro-style offense than any of these guys. In fact, I think he was the only guy that I saw take any snaps under center that I saw. I'm not saying they didn't, but yeah. And I thought he could go through his progressions. But like I said, to me, he's one of those guys where, like, I know they're not that far outside the top 10. But if you're talking about him going to someone like the Vikings, I could kind of see that. And I could kind of think, okay, you've got two, you know, one obviously elite receiver, one very promising prospect at receiver, tight end, two good tackles. You know, he's got to come in and just run the system. I think that's a great fit. If he ends up there, I think that would be great. If he ended up at the Raiders, the Falcons, the Broncos, where, you know, you are going to be asked to do more, aren't you? You're going to be asked to do more for all those teams because there isn't the talent around it like it is at the Vikings. I would worry because I don't know. He hasn't ever been asked to do that. And, you know, you compare it to someone like Drake May where I've been critical of him, but to be fair, he was everything to that team. Jay McCarthy wasn't asked to do loads, was he? So that would be my worries on him. But I think there's talent there. I could see him working in situations, but I don't think he's a guy that can work in every situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I've described him as my Rorschach test this year, because I think whatever you're looking at is and want to see, you will see. I think there is arm talent there. I think there is talent there. I think he's a good athlete. I think he can make all the throws. I think, you know, he can operate an offense. But there are times when he struggles to throw with anticipation and he needs to see it open before he releases the ball. I think it was really interesting the point you made about the kind of arm talent. I don't think he's an arm thrower. He's a body thrower. And I think that, you know, we talked about with Drake May, him having poor footwork, and I think part of that he can kind of get away with it at times because he's a natural arm thrower and he's got the arm strength and the arm talent that he can almost get away with subpar footwork. It affects his accuracy, but he can, whereas JJ McCarthy can't. And I think you can view that one or two ways. You can say he's got good footwork and therefore he regularly sets his feet and throws off a good platform and it leads to having, you know, good end results, or you could also say he needs a good platform to be able to throw. So if he's, you know, having to move around the pocket, having to, you know, avoid the rush and throw off a challenging base or adjust his arm angles, he might struggle. And I don't know the answer whether you could say that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think you could basically spin it either way. I think that, you know, I think it was Nate Tice who said this perfectly in terms of JJ McCarthy. He's a second round quarterback, but he's a quarterback. So he, you know, that's top 20 pick. This year, we're particularly desperate for quarterbacks. So that makes him a top 10 pick, you know, and all it takes is one team to particularly like him. And then suddenly he's a top 5 pick. And I think that that's the way that JJ McCarthy's going. Yeah, in an ideal world, you would sit back and take him in the second rounds. And you could potentially then sit him for a year and allow him to develop and, you know, maybe build out that frame and maybe work on some of that processing. I think the processing is there, but the anticipation, I think, is lacking slightly. And I think he'd be fantastic. But the problem is that if you're taking it, if you're waiting till the second round, you're not getting him. And if you're taking him in the top 15, the top 10, wherever he ended up going, it's very difficult to keep those fans happy with him sat on the sidelines, isn't it? And therefore, he's going to get played and he's probably going to get rushed and he's not going to have that time to develop. So, yeah, I'm really excited about the potential, but I am very concerned that I think he is more reliant on who his play caller is going to be, what the surroundings are going to be, and how he is allowed to develop than potentially some of the other quarterbacks. So if, you know, you threw out New England as a particularly bad landing spot, if for whatever reason JJ McCarthy ended up somewhere like that, where there's no receiving talent, there's no offensive line, it's a new play caller, but we don't really know how good he's going to be as a play caller. And it's like, in that situation, I'd be really concerned. If JJ McCarthy could end up in, you know, Minnesota, where he's got all of that surrounding talent and that kind of incubator to kind of allow him to develop, I'd be a lot higher and a lot more excited. So, yeah, it's kind of a, I don't really know what to make of him, shall we say, at this point.
I think I know you're always against the idea, you know, your mantra, you should probably get a tattoo somewhere, of draft the talent, not don't worry about the landing spot so much.
We've got t-shirts now. If you want that t-shirt, we've got t-shirts made.
But I think with him, the landing spot, I do think for not necessarily all QBs, but for certain QBs, it's so important, because I know it's a bit of a dirty word now, but I think he struck me as this guy could be an elite game manager. And I could see him be an incredibly productive NFL quarterback with good surrounding talent, you know. And I think there's a role to do that. You know, I think obviously we're talking about a guy who was drafted at the last pick of the seventh round with Brock Purdy, but that idea that actually there's still a place in the NFL for a guy who can go into an offense and have talent around him. There's a skill to getting the ball into those guys' hands at the right time and almost being like a vessel for the coach to try and control the game. If you've got an elite offensive play caller, elite offensive designer and talent around you. And I could totally see him being a fantastic NFL QB if he lands in the right spot. If he goes to somewhere where he has, like you said, like the Patriots, or somewhere where he's expected to carry the load, I do genuinely worry it will crush him. I do. I think that I can't sit here and say, oh, it definitely will, but I would have my real concerns there. And I think draft day is just going to be so important for him. I do genuinely really hope. I think him and the Vikings would be such a good fit. Such a good fit.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how things play over the next 2 months, definitely. Now, going from a potentially inexperienced, you know, guy that hasn't started much, wasn't asked to do much, to the single most experienced quarterback we have ever seen coming out of college, Bo Nix, 6'2", 217 pounds, out of Oregon via Auburn. He is 23 years old. Yes, he is older than Trey Lance is right now. What do you make of Bo Nix? You know, as I said, 61 college starts, more than any other quarterback in the history of college. Do you think that's potentially a strength, that we've got that level of experience, or is it a stick to beat him with for the fact that he's not been good enough to come out of college the last 2 years?
I think when you're as hyped as he was at various points, I think it's a concern, isn't it? Rather than this is a guy that didn't get a shot for a few years and then sort of finally made his way to the starting lineup and then put together a couple of years of decent production. You know, I think he was at Auburn. He was thought very highly of as a prospect, and it didn't quite work out there. I think there's some strengths to his game. I mean, he's almost like the opposite of JJ McCarthy. He is all arm when he throws, and he clearly has a very good arm, but he over-relies on it, in my opinion. You know, I think he's got really funny mechanics. He looked to me like he threw everything off his back foot near enough. It was rare to see him. You know, he's very chest on in his style. And and it was very rare to see him step into his throws. He's a mobile to make plays. I didn't think he was a runner. I literally wrote that down, and he ripped off like a 60-yard run in one of the games I was watching. But apart from that, I didn't see a huge amount of rushing upside. It was more to buy time. And I think he did have some playmaking ability. I think the rush definitely bothers him. And I can see you got that on the slide there. But also I felt like he was really quick to check down. You know, and it's hard to know, isn't it? And it's hard to know if you're not in the offense, if you don't know the offense. But, you know, running backs and you know, he didn't give plays a lot of chance to develop kind of at times. And the only other thing that I really noticed that really kind of bothered me was he had a dangerous habit, in my mind, of when there was pressure, he would just keep backing up. He didn't seem to want to step up and buy his time or slide in the pocket. It was he would back, and then try and throw something off his back foot. And I think, you know, in the NFL, you don't get away with that. You know, you don't get away with that. Basically, Mahomes might every now and then, but even he gets found out with that one at times. So that is concerning to me. I mean, he for me is the sixth out of these six QBs. I have heard rumours, although it seems to have gone a bit quieter since the Senior Bowl, of first round. I don't see it. And I think since the changes on the fifth year for first round players has happened, you know, since it's not quite the bargain that it was, teams seem to be a little more reluctant to trade back up into the first to take these QBs. And I don't think there's obviously, you know, the teams that are drafting at the back of the first round usually don't need a quarterback for a good reason, because they're good teams and that usually means having a good quarterback. I couldn't see him as a first rounder. And then I think he falls a little bit into, and I really liked this guy last year, but it falls a little bit into like the Hendon Hooker kind of situation where you're a little bit like, where are you taking him and what are you going to get from him? Because it's not really a development QB league anymore, is it? I mean, I can't, you know, you get the odd one like Jordan Love, but generally now when teams take QBs, they take them in the first and they're going to play. Or if they're not taking them in the first, they're kind of, right, you're a backup. There's not a, it doesn't happen very often.
No, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of, to me, if you're taking a quarterback in the, you know, late first, second round with a view of developing them, normally you're looking for tools with some rawness that you think you can round out game. Bo Nix, as we said, 61 starts. He is a very experienced quarterback. I think we're probably about as close to the ceiling as we potentially can be. I don't know how much more there is. So if you're not drafting him to start him right away, I don't know how much more growth he's got. I think you said about his arm strength, and it's part of it is probably because he doesn't throw with good mechanics. But I saw some times where he was pushing the ball downfield and it sat up there a little bit too long for my liking. I think he had to let the ball go early. Probably a little bit earlier than he needed to, and that gave some DBs a chance. The ADOT is a real concern. You know, yes, some of that will be schematic, but 167 qualifying quarterbacks last year in college, he had the fourth lowest ADOT at 6.9 yards. Like, that's pretty serious. That he's, as you said, he is very quick to check down. The pressure is a real issue. I think part of that leads into his, you know, frequency of how often he's checking down. But to me, it's such a massive issue in terms of not how you deal with pressure, because we know that pressure stats aren't sticky and they can come and go year on year and that kind of thing. But to me, if you're a player that is willing to stand in the pocket and can move around but keep your eyes downfield, that's massive. And that's a skill that translates to the next level. I've never seen a quarterback that's got the level of hype of Bo Nix that stares at the pass rush and takes his eyes off his receivers as often as he does. He drops his eyes so frequently to look at the pass rush, and it's, you can almost see it. He'll drop his eyes, he'll avoid a rusher, and then he almost has to look up and try and find where the receivers are again because he's taking his eyes off them. And I think that's a real concern for me, definitely at the next level.
I would be amazed if he went round one, like some people are talking about. I just don't see an elite QB prospect there. I just don't see someone. And like you said, I mean, I think his arm strength's good, but that's because it is all arm. He literally does not seem to throw with the rest of his body, which is actually more of a problem, you know. And he obviously hasn't got the arm strength of someone like Drake May that at times does a similar thing. And I came into this, he was definitely six for me, and I feel like the more we've talked about him, the lower I've kind of got on him. That I hope he proves me wrong. I hope he has a long, successful NFL career. But if you're taking a guy who's that polished and NFL ready, if you're not taking him to be your starter, what are you taking him for? Because if he's going to go and sit on the bench for 2 years, that's just killing 2 years on his contract, and he's going to be a 25-year-old first-time starter. Like, I struggle to find the role for him because, I can't see if, I know there's some QB needy teams at the top of the draft, and you know, you end up with years where Christian Ponder goes high and Jake Locker and that crew. But if he goes high to one of those teams, he did not strike me as someone who could be carrying an offense. I mean, yeah, I'd be really surprised. I mean, I guess he could end up maybe, you know, if it goes back around and he ends up in the second round and he ends up in a bit of a Will Levis situation like last year, you know, maybe one of these teams like the Raiders or someone like that don't take a QB round one and they pick him up round two, maybe. Yeah. But again, if you're one of those teams, wouldn't you rather take a punt on someone a bit younger and a bit less? But I know a lot of these guys, I know a lot of the prospects that are going to be 2, 3, 4, you know, in the rounds are older guys, aren't they? You know, because we're going to talk about the next one too. So,
yeah, absolutely. I agree with everything you said. I think there's some real issues here. I think he is a good pre-snap processor, and I think that is definitely a thing he can hang his hat on. But I don't know if there's enough for me to get excited. So, where he's probably going to be going in fantasy circles in terms of, you know, if he does get early day two draft capital, he's probably going to be in that second, third round, and it's just not a point that I can get excited about drafting him.
Yeah.
The final guy we're going to talk about now, though, Michael Penix, another player that's older than Trey Lance, might I mention again, out of Washington, obviously a phenomenal last couple of years with those three phenomenal receivers and a great offensive line, 6'3", 213 pounds. An interesting career, obviously four season-ending injuries, which yeah. I feel like we kind of have to start there. Is that something that you're overly concerned about at the next level?
I think if you're looking at it from an NFL point of view, I think it's all about where you're taking him. And I mean, he to me is a guy that if I was a QB needy team and you were telling me that I could, you know, you miss out on well, obviously my feelings on Drake May are a little bit different, but you miss out on one of the top guys and you're sitting there in this where there seems we have this funny situation where the first three teams need a QB, then there seems to be a bit of a break, and then you've got a little run, haven't you, with Atlanta. I know there's free agency and Justin Fields and stuff to go, but you've got Atlanta, you've got the Raiders, you've got the Broncos, you've got the Vikings all sitting there who all look like places they could go. If you're one of those teams that miss out there and then you're looking to trade back into the late first or take someone in the second, this is the guy to me that I would be interested in, because I think his film's really good. I think he's got, you know, he's accurate. I think he was accurate to the point where he seemed to be able to pick out. He wasn't just hitting guys, but he was hitting guys in stride. He was hitting them, keeping them away from not only leading them into space, but also able, I thought, of a few times I saw him sort of almost doing the thing where Tom Brady was elite at making sure that he was keeping guys out of harm's way. So I thought that was really impressive. I thought he had good arm strength. I thought he threw such a pretty deep ball. That is, you know, definitely some of the throws. I know he was throwing to a very talented receiving core, but, you know, yeah, he was laying him in there nice. I thought he had good movement in the pocket. I agree with you that I don't think he's an out-of-structure player, but I think he was good enough moving around in the pocket to buy himself enough time that it wasn't something like if the first and second read aren't there, it's all going to crumble around him. I thought his mechanics were solid. I thought he stepped into his throws. One little concern for me was when he did tend to miss, he tended to miss high, which is always a little bit wearing in the NFL. That doesn't tend to lead to good places. And the injuries are obviously a worry. But I think, again, it's where you're taking him. And for me, I think he'd be someone that I'd be, if put it this way, in Superflex, I've got a few picks in one of our leagues, haven't I, at the end of the first round in the 16-teamer. He's someone that I'm kind of hoping is lingering there, because I think in a good spot, he could be a really good pro. So, yeah. I'm a Penix fan.
Yeah, I really like Penix. I think I prefer him more for the NFL than for fantasy, shall we say. I think you know, the processing ability, the accuracy, the ability to layer throws, as I've got here on the screen, you know, you see it time and time again. I think he's the kind of person that if he ends in a good scheme, if he has a good landing spot where there is talent around him, where he's got an inventive play caller, he could be phenomenal. He is not a guy that is going to create out structure. He is not a guy that is going to, you know, get out of the pocket and make guys miss and add anything with the rushing side of the game. He is a pocket passer. But I'm excited about what he could be. The other thing, I really like left-handed quarterbacks. I think that it
sounds... You might be the only person that's ever said that, Rich.
Yeah, look, I've tried to do the deep dive on it, but the data isn't there, okay? But I have this theory, and I think it's been backed up by how many dropped interceptions Tua's had. A left-handed quarterback, the ball spins the other way. As someone that played with a left-handed quarterback, it is so much harder to catch if you're not used to catching from a left-handed quarterback. Tua has an insane amount of dropped interceptions. And I think part of that is because the offense, you're practicing with a left-handed quarterback. You get used to the ball spinning the other way. It is a different way of catching the ball. A defense going against you, you don't get that practice. You're not used to it. It comes at you different. It feels different. It spins different. And I think that, you know, Bill Belichick always talked about he wanted a left-footed punter because the ball spun the other way and teams couldn't prepare for it. I kind of quite like, as you know, as long as I'm not losing anything, I quite like the fact he's left-handed because I think it's a hidden, underrated asset that defenses aren't ready for the ball spinning the other way. But maybe I'll be getting too far into the weeds there. But yeah, I really
like that as a theory. And you know, like I said, I really like Penix. He's one of these guys out of, you know, I mean, I feel like out of this class, it's hard, isn't it, to cast your mind back to how you thought about a lot of these players pre-draft. Because it's easy to look back on 2020 and be like, oh, yeah, I liked all those guys. I thought they were all going to be. I mean, I don't think we did we? You know. I feel like with 2021, and it didn't turn out that way, it felt like there was more confidence that some of these, you know, it feels like some obvious warts for me in all these guys, you know, and it's waiting to see how much of a problem they all prove to be. But I think Penix for me is my favorite of these guys that I would take a punt on, because I think he's the one. I agree with what you're saying, where there's not going to be the rush in there. So, you know, he might never be the elite, you know, he might never be the guy that's going to churn out top five, top seven sort of fantasy seasons year on year. But in that part where he's probably going to get drafted means that you're probably looking at him at the end of round one. That to me, then, if he can sustain a career where he's a top 16 to 20 NFL QB for 8 years, that's well worth taking, isn't it? You know, especially in a super flex league, you know, with a little bit of upside.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, if he ends up with 4 or 5 years of top 24 production, I mean, that's worth the top six pick. I don't think you have to spend that to go and get Michael Penix. I think, you know, if he's a top 45 pick in the NFL draft, I think he's probably going to maybe sneak into the back end of the first round.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting place. You know, if you're a contender and you can add Michael Penix as your QB3, maybe your QB4 in a superflex draft, I'm really excited about that, because I think you need to be in the right situation where perhaps you're pairing him with your QB2 that's a bit more boom bust, that's got a bit more upside, that's a little bit more risky, shall we say. But I think that there is, if Michael Penix gets a decent surrounding talent, gets the opportunity, I think he's going to be a solid, reliable starter in the NFL, and that has incredible value in Superflex leagues.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
we're gonna finish up, Kenny. Can you just run us through your ranking and tiers of these Elite Six quarterbacks?
So I would go. Sorry, just turning back in my book. I would go Caleb 1. I would have Jaden 2. I struggle with three because I'm not a Drake May guy, but I feel, I go back and forth on this, but I probably would go Drake May three, JJ McCarthy four, and then Penix five and Bo Nix six. But I still think there's some slight wiggle room there. I mean, I would not be surprised if Michael Penix ended up having a better pro career than both Drake May and JJ McCarthy. Personally, I could see it. I mean, the concern with him obviously is that it could all end very quickly because of all the injuries and stuff. So I do take that. But yeah, for me, the top two is very clear in my mind. The rest get a bit mushy after that. And I know I think I have to pay a fine or something if I say this again. But the landing spot for all the other guys matters quite a lot to me. So I will wait and see on that.
No, perfect. So for me, I've got Caleb Williams one, Drake May two. That is a tier. I've then got Jaden Daniels in a tier of his own at three, JJ McCarthy in a tier of his own at four. I've then got Penix five, Bo Nix six, and then Spencer Rattler at seven. And those three are in a tier. And to be honest, I might even be looking at moving Rattler over Bo Nix if he gets the draft capital on day two.
Because I think he is sneaky, such an interesting prospect because he was obviously such a high recruit. It went so badly at Oklahoma. Although to be fair to him, the guy who took his place is the number one, is probably going to be the number one overall pick. So, you know, it's not the worst guy to lose your job to. He's definitely the one that I'm looking at that, you know, maybe that round three pick that, you know, rather than taking the 19th running back that's about to come off the board or whatever, you know, he's one that I'm like, you know, there might be something there. But I said that was Stetson Bennett last year and he might not even be in the NFL this year. So, you know, on that one. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first. Well, thank you so much for time, Danny. It's always great. If always you are here and you've not hit the like, if you've not hit the subscribe, do it now. We'll be back very soon. We've got running back. We've got a double dose of wide receiver, tight end, and then we've got a sleeper show as well. Hit the subscribe button. You will not want to miss it.